Welcome back to Ready Player None, the only podcast that encourages social distancing all year round. Last chapter, with Wade spending all his time wallowing in his own filth and earning money off other people's appropriated art, he took his eye off the ball and Artemis has managed to get the Jade Key. I've always said she was better off without him, but is she a more interesting character who I'd rather have as a protagonist? Or is she a Sixer spy? Let's see if we find out in chapter 21. So we open this chapter with finding out a little bit more about the auctions that were briefly touched upon last time. Here we've got another extensive paragraph which can be summed up as, sometimes in a video game, an enemy drops an item. We find out that among the equipment you can get in the Oasis, there are these things called artifacts. There's only a few hundred of them in existence, and they all date back to the beginning of the Oasis. They're all super powerful items. They can't be duplicated, and you can only get them by either finishing a really difficult quest, killing an avatar who has one, or purchasing one in an online auction. Given the rarity of some of these things, it's always big news when they go up for auction. And Wade tells us about one 3 years ago called the Cataclyst. According to its auction listing, the Cataclyst was a sort of magical bomb, and it could be used only once. When it was detonated, it would kill every single avatar and NPC in the sector, including its owner. There was no defense against it. If you were unlucky enough to be in the same sector when it went off, you were a goner, regardless of how powerful or well protected you were. Okay, huge bum. I'm only reading that out to you because, like the Ultraman thing from last episode, I'm assuming it's going to factor into the plot much later. It was bought by an anonymous bidder for over 1 million credits, and it's never been detonated and they don't know who actually bought it. So it's become a running gag. This sentence stood out to me. When a Gunter was surrounded by avatars she didn't like, she would claim to have the Cataclyst in her inventory and threaten to detonate it. So, either Ernest Cline just picked a pronoun at random, or we've got implied sexual harassment here in the Oasis. Out of all the characters in this book so far, only 4 have been female, so I'm glad you decided to choose the female pronoun for this particular scenario. Well done. Well done on your commentary about being a woman on the internet. Of course, it's completely tone-deaf given your main character's a cyber-stalking creepo. Now, all this stuff about how auctions work is establishing context for this other thing that went up for sale about a few months ago. Findoros. Or maybe Findoros, it's a Y. I'm not sure on the pronunciation, so I'm going to call it Findoros Tablet of Finding. It might be pronounced Findoro, but that just makes me think about Finder's Crispy Pancakes. I'm not sure where Findoro's Tablet of Finding originally came from. I think it might be an Ernie Cline original. But the thing has actually gone on to appear in Shroud of the Avatar, an MMO by one of the guys who did Ultima. I was here about to read the wiki page telling you that he'd ripped it off from there, but it says here, Ernie Cline has allowed us to include Findoro's Tablet of Finding from his best-selling novel Ready Player One. How cool is that? How cool indeed. So essentially, it's a tablet that you write on, and it tells you where an avatar is in the Oasis. You can only do this once per day, and it only narrows it down. So if you're in a different sector to your target, it'll only tell you what sector they're in, and nothing more specific than that. If you're in the same sector, it'll tell you what planet. If you're on the same planet, it'll actually give you coordinates. So it only gives you a vague idea of where your target is the further away you are. This went up for auction right in the middle of the egg hunt, so someone out there has made a really good investment, because there are a lot of people willing to pay a lot of money to have that kind of an item. Because you can find a key that way, or you can find a gate that way. All you need to do is watch the scoreboard and write down the name of the avatar who's just completed the quest. Now, there was a huge bidding war over this item, but the winner was Nolan Sorrento. He could have bid anonymously, but he obviously wanted the world to know who now possessed the artifact. So now the Sixers have the power to track down anyone, and they want everyone to know about it. So now the hobby of gunting is no longer safe for our quote-unquote heroes. Well, providing they're not in a no PvP zone. We're being told all this because now that Artemis' score has gone up in the scoreboard, the whole of Sector 7...
Never heard of it.
Never will.
The whole of Sector 7 is flooded with Sixers, so clearly they can't narrow down her location any more than what sector she's in. But because they're completely unsubtle about what they're doing, everybody knows that the Jade Key is somewhere in Sector 7, next to the frozen body of Megatron. I said that as a joke, but knowing this book, it's entirely likely. So, Sector 7, filled up with Sixers, filled up with Gunters. And Wade's fed up because, as the newsfeed headlines put it, Parzival dethroned! Artemis, new number one Gunter! Sixers closing in! I'm happy for her. Wade stares at the scoreboard for 30 minutes while he mentally berates himself. You've got no one but yourself to blame, I told myself. You let success go to your head. You slacked off on your research. What, did you think lightning would strike twice? That eventually you'd just stumble across the clue you needed to find the Jade Key? You cheated not only the game, but yourself. You didn't grow, you didn't improve, you took a shortcut and gained nothing. You experienced a hollow victory, nothing was risked and nothing was gained. It's sad that you don't know the difference. Oh wait, sorry, that's something else. He is upset that a girl he mooned over has the temerity to be better at video games than he is. Oh, honey, no. Suddenly, I wanted to win the contest more than ever. Not just for the money. I wanted to prove myself to Artemis. And I wanted the hunt to be over so that she would talk to me again, so that I could finally meet her in person, see her true face, and try to make sense of how I felt about her. Honey, no. If you think winning the contest instead of her is going to make her impressed or proud of you, or that you're going to prove yourself in some way, remember that Artemis is the one who wants to cure world hunger with the prize money, and you just want to watch old movies on a spaceship. So Wade bucks up his ideas and decides to try and solve the quatrain himself. If you've forgotten, because I have, the quatrain is... The captain conceals the jade key in a dwelling long neglected, but you can only blow the whistle once the trophies are all collected. So to recap, he's still pretty certain of the connection to a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal, and the little toy whistles contained therein. Captain Crunch, of course, is also the alias of John Draper, the phone freaker. I found a few worlds named after famous hackers, like Woz and Mitnick, but none named after John Draper. So he thinks about the trophies part of the riddle. Halliday had won 5 trophies for Game Designer of the Year back around the turn of the century. And while the real things are on display in the GSS Museum in Columbus, there's a replica display of them on a planet called Arcade. Unlike Finder's Crispy Pancake, or whatever it was called, I'm 1000% sure that word is pronounced arcade. A-R-C-H-A-I-D-E. I guarantee that is pronounced as arcade. So I'm going to call it Archide. So Archide is in fact in Sector 7. Wade admits it's a very thin connection, but it's a lead worth checking out. Wade gets his AI, Max Headroom, to prep his starship, the Vonnegut, for flight, while he goes down a Star Trek lift to his armory. Going to a physical armory to change your loadout seems like a really poorly designed game mechanic. Because Archide is a PvP zone, he's got to put on his fighting gear. This one thing here is called Hail Mail, and it's powered armor. I misread it as Hate Mail. I really wish it was called Hate Mail. That would make this whole exercise worthwhile. Blaster pistols, pump action shotgun. He's got a +5 Vorpal Bastard Sword. Sidebar, I always think it's really weird when these massive swords are named Vorpal Sword, taking the name from a nonsense poem for children. And they almost never go snicker snack. That was the Vorpal Sword's whole deal in Jabberwocky. I also grabbed a few other essential items. An extra pair of anti-grav boots, a ring of magical resistance, an amulet of protection, some gauntlets of giant strength, some gauntlets of giant strength. If you caught last week's extra episode tech support, then the staccato listing of items is starting to sound very familiar. Because it turns out, that way he writes originates from his slam poetry. Every time he lists off a bunch of references like that, what he's really doing is reciting a slam poem. That was a missing piece in the puzzle that is the psyche of Ernest Cline. And I feel like we're finally unlocking the puzzle box. Alright, this is just getting beyond parody now. So in Wade's hangar, he's got a battle-worn X-Wing, his DeLorean, which if you remember is a pop culture turducken, and the Vonnegut, a heavily modified Firefly-class transport vessel modelled after the Serenity in the classic Firefly TV series. What's the deal, Ernest? That's not from the 80s. The ship had been named the Kaylee when I'd first obtained it. Presumably that's just Ernest paying lip service to another geeky actress he wants to bang. But Wade renamed it the Vonnegut. He'd stolen the ship when he was attacked by oviraptors while going through the Whedonverse. Ships were like most other items in the Oasis. Each one had specific attributes, weapons, and speed capabilities. My X-Wing was far more maneuverable than the oviraptors' large transport ship, so it was no trouble for me to avoid the barrage from their aftermarket guns while I bombarded them with laser bolts and proton torpedoes. So there you are, Ernest Cline has definitively settled who'd win in a fight between an X-Wing and the Serenity. Next time join us, the Superman fights Goku. So Wade had boarded the ship and killed all the avatars on there, and the captain was apologising once he found out who he was. Our hero, ladies and gentlemen. Killing all his rivals, including a surrendering opponent. So he gets in the Vonnegut and launches off from Falco.
Falco!
Falco! Falco! There's several ships in orbit around his asteroid. They're like fans and wannabes, and there's ones that tail him everywhere he goes, see if they can sell some information about the hunt to people later. Of course, he always loses them by going into light speed. Alright? I don't know why the other ships aren't light speed capable. Is it a money thing, maybe? Max Headroom reports that it's 53 minutes to Archide. I'm smiling every time I mispronounce. But the journey will take 15 minutes if they go through a Stargate. Now, it's not given a capital S, so it's not a Stargate. It is some sort of teleport the size of a spaceship. And apparently they charge by the mass of your ship and the distance that you want to travel. But under the circumstances, I was willing to splurge a little.
Just like he splurges a little when he's thinking about Artemis.
And then the final line of this chapter is, let's take the Stargate, Max. We're kind of in a hurry. End chapter 21. Bit of a shorter chapter this time. Wade proves to be an insufferable prick like usual. He's still got a bizarre attitude problem towards Artemis. And despite the exciting revelations provided by the cliffhanger of the previous chapter, we're no further on, really. At least it's giving me a fun new sci-fi name to mispronounce. Now, if this book wanted to do something interesting, they could make this the part where Wade goes off the rails and becomes a villain. He's already an anti-hero, but perhaps he can become the antagonist in Artemis' story. Please just get the action to Artemis. I cannot sanction this man's buffoonery much longer. You know, the pacing is really sort of out of whack. So the cliffhanger at the end of last chapter got me not excited, but certainly interested in seeing what would happen in this chapter. And then it just remains completely unaddressed. That's the diametric opposite of a page-turner. That's a disappointment. That's a book-put-downer. Oh well. For more disappointment, you can follow me on Twitter, @TheLastGherkin, or follow the show on Twitter, @RPN_pod. Watch with subtitles on YouTube, The Last Gherkin, or get an MP3 download at thelastgherkin.podbean.com. Oh, I am irritated by that cliffhanger. That's like if an episode of a comedy show ended without a big joke. Well, bye. Test recording. I need to sit closer to the mic for over a million credits.
A million credits.
Over a million credits. Over a million credits. From my own research, I found out that Findoro's tablet is from Shroud of the Avatar, and the page on Findoro's tablet reads thus. Ernie Klein has allowed us to include Findoro's... Oh, it's the other way around!